Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate, along with my co-host for our monthly ethics discussion, Difficult Decisions in Healthcare, Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. Welcome back, Dr. Eastwood.
It's good to be back.
I look forward to this every month. Our topic this morning is actually a continuation of the one we started last month about stem cells, the promises they bring, the questions they raise, the controversies, weighing the scientific and medical possibilities against the moral questions and our values. Stem cells are the answers to a lot of questions and the foundation for some arguments. And Dr. Eastwood, we had a guest last month who was gracious enough to rejoin us again this month. Will you introduce him,
yes,
please?
Yes, we're pleased to have Dr. Michael Zuber back with us this month. He's a professor or assistant professor in the Department of Ophthalmology here at Upstate Medical University, and also has an appointment in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology here.
Yeah, well, welcome back, Dr. Zuber.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And you've been here before to talk about your research. You actually work with retinal stem cells.
That's right. So my lab is interested in trying to find a way to convert pluripotent cells that can make on any cell in the body, to a multipotent cell type that will just make retinal cells.
All right. So we're going to do some quick review of the science behind stem cells. We covered it pretty carefully last month, but we don't want anybody who's just tuning in this month to actually miss that part of the conversation. Let's talk about the two basic types of stem cells that we mostly hear about in the news, and that would be embryonic versus the non-embryonic cells. Dr. Eastwood?
Yes. So that's a convenient way to divide stem cells. Embryonic stem cells are derived from generally five-day-old embryos. That means 5 days after the sperm and egg have connected. And the five-day embryo is about 50, 100, or 100-plus cells.
And last month, I asked you the question about whether or not these cells were being taken from aborted fetuses, and you said no.
No.
Where are they coming from?
They're coming from what are called blastocysts, so very, very early in the embryonic life, about 5 days. And of course, we all know 9 months.
Right, but they're not being taken out of a woman.
No, that's correct. They're being taken from what are called IVF or in vitro fertilized eggs. And we know that IVF eggs are created literally by the thousands every day for other purposes to create new babies.
And these are for people who have trouble giving birth in natural ways, and so they combine egg and sperm, and it stays in a bank until they're ready to be implanted into mothers.
But there
are leftovers.
There are many leftovers, and we'll get into some of the implications of that a little bit later in this program, but there are thousands and thousands more IVF embryos created than are used.
They are. Okay. And Dr. Zuber, you were describing the difference between pluripotent and multipotent. So if you could give us that briefly again.
So briefly, embryonic stem cells are pluripotent. They can generate all the different embryonic cell types.
Okay. So let's make sure people understand so that if you have that kind of pluripotent cell, it could be...
You could make muscle, for instance. Mm-hmm. You could make the gut tissue. You could make nervous tissue, such as brain or eye.
Skin,
exactly.
Anything,
exactly.
Because they, when they are actually the blastocyte, they eventually become human beings all on their own, right?
We all started that way.
We did. We were all that at one time. Okay.
Any one of the 220-plus cell types that are in the adult body can be generated from these cells.
From that one cell. Okay.
That's right.
A multipotent?
Now, multipotent cell is more restricted. It's limited to maybe 7, maybe 5, maybe 4 different cell types. In the retina, for example, we have 7 different cell types. And so a retinal stem cell is a multipotent stem cell that will just generate those 7 retinal cell types.
I see. All right. And those are pretty easily extracted. Am I right? So they use them like for blood marrow transplants and those kinds of things?
Bone marrow transplantation is a good example of a multipotent stem cell.
Uh-huh.
It's been used for many years for bone marrow disorders, leukemia, also breast cancer and other disorders.
And so those are things that are being done today. This is not about futuristic. This
That's
is
correct.
What's being done today.
Mm-hmm.
What other promises are there from stem cells, Dr. Eastwood? What are some of the things that scientists are looking at doing with stem cells?
Well, we have a whole range. We'd like to be able to treat certain cancers with stem cells. We'd like to be able to treat certain muscle injury. The muscle injury that's probably most relevant is after a heart attack where portions of the heart muscle are killed, or before a heart attack where portions of the heart muscle are under-supplied with blood. And then also neurologic conditions such as Parkinson's disease, conditions where the spinal cord is injured, things like that.
Like even stroke.
Stroke. Mm-hmm.
And diabetes, I have to think, if you know that it's a problem with the pancreas, then you could rebuild the pancreas perhaps?
Maybe not the whole pancreas, but at least those cells called islet cells that create insulin.
Insulin. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, but these are not things that are necessarily being done today. Dr. Zuber, you work in a range where you're talking about improving things for the eye. And mm-hmm. I asked you last month, and it seems relevant today. If I understand correctly, what you do is you look at cells that are damaged and you replace them with stem cells that have been created.
That's right.
That are healthy.
And that's cell replacement therapy in general, is that you identify the cells that are dying or not working properly in the mm-hmm. body, and then you use stem cells, push those stem cells, embryonic stem cells, for example, or other forms of pluripotent cells directly to that cell type that you need, and then you can replace the damaged cells with those cells.
I see. Okay. So those are the basic science and the promises of what stem cells might do someday. And then we get into the ethics, and we started to touch on all of this last month. Mm-hmm. We asked what those questions were. And if I understand correctly, the ethical questions pretty much come from where people consider the origins of life. So explain
That's
that
correct.
To us, Dr. Eastwood.
Yeah. Most of the ethical issues, moral issues, relate to embryonic stem cells and our personal beliefs, and they vary from person to person about when life begins, when human life begins, when we become human beings. And Dr. Zuber and I were having some conversations about this earlier. Maybe you could pose the question and your thoughts about this in terms of...
I consider myself kind of a student at this point in the discussion because as a scientist, you know, we're people as well, and we have ethical and moral considerations we have to do. I mean, and so let me ask the question. So are we, when you talk about, when people have conflicts, are they talking about human life or life in general?
Mm-hmm.
For example, is the sperm and the egg, are they both alive? And mm-hmm. so is contraception, for example, in some people's sure. mind just as much of a problem as the isolation of embryonic stem cells from a blastocyst in a...
I think that's a really good question. It illustrates our huge variability among people in the way we believe and the way we think about things. For some people, a sperm and an egg, and certainly biologically, a sperm and an egg are alive.
Mm-hmm.
Are they humans? In my view, they're probably not yet human, but at least they have the ability to combine to make a human person. So you could argue, depending upon your religious and moral beliefs, that a sperm and an egg are in this continuum. They certainly are in the continuum, and they have the potential to become human beings. Other people believe that life begins at conception. Other people believe that life begins when this fertilized egg is implanted in the uterus, which is a few days after conception.
So there's a period of time from when that egg is fertilized until it actually can grow to become human?
Yeah, to do a little anatomy here,
yeah.
The egg is generally fertilized not in the uterus, sometimes it is, but usually not, but usually in what are called the fallopian tubes. These are the tubes that lead on both sides out of the uterus and are very much in proximity to the ovaries. And so the fertilization usually occurs in the fallopian tubes, and then the fertilized egg migrates down through the tube into the uterus and implants in the wall of the uterus. Some people believe that life begins sometime after that. One threshold is at 24 weeks. You know, normal gestation is about 37, 38 weeks. And at 24 weeks, or before 24 weeks, the lungs are just not formed sufficiently for a fetus or a young baby to survive on its own.
Not even if you put that baby in a NICU somewhere and gave it everything it needed technically?
Well, we certainly do put 23 and 24-week babies in NICUs, and sometimes they survive, but they don't survive much before that.
Because they really don't have the mechanism to do that.
Yeah, so I just wonder if I could ask the question. So, but this is all technology-driven, right?
That's
so,
right.
So 20 years ago, a baby at that age wouldn't have survived, whereas now they do. So doesn't that kind of move the barrier about what is a human life and not if your definition is can you survive in the mother?
It sure does, yeah. In fact, we hearken back to President John Kennedy's baby, I think it was a son who was born at 32 weeks of gestation, and that baby died because we didn't have the technology and ability at that time. Now a baby who is born at 32 weeks gestation, if they're otherwise well, will almost invariably survive.
Well, it makes me ask the question, though, if we take it backwards and backwards, because I guess the longer ago it was, the less chance there would be of those cells surviving. But let's even take it back today. So if what we're talking about are these embryos in these IVF units, the in vitro units that have been fertilized, they can't stay in storage forever, can they? And if those are the embryonic stem cells you're talking about using for some science, what would happen to them if they weren't being used that way and somebody decided not to use them for babies?
Well, forever is a long time, and I think the answer to your question, they can't stay in storage forever, is probably right. They can't. But they can certainly stay in storage for a long time, years, maybe decades, and they're at very, very low temperatures. But it's not just that. First of all, we're dealing with probably several hundred thousand such IVF embryos. And not all of them are really suitable for implantation, but they may be suitable for embryonic research.
Ah, and you know what? We need to take a break for the news, but let's come back on that point because it seems to me that's really a big part of the question. If what we're talking about is stem cell research and people have questions about where life begins, maybe this is one of those gray areas that we could talk about a little bit further. So listeners, please do stay with us. We'll be back after the news. This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.